We're going to have some fun today. We've got AJ Rice with us, and we're going to get to a book that he has written about white privilege. And be prepared to be shocked and actually entertained. And some of this is quite humorous. We'll get to AJ in just a second. But first, I'll let you know we're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And don't let the Dodd-Frank Law of 2010 kick in where the banks can take your money. You got retirement associated with the bank, they can take that too. Don't let that happen. What you need to do right now is protect yourself. Noble Gold can guide you through these troubled waters with troubled banks that have everything on their side. Go to DaveHodgesGold.com. That's DaveHodgesGold.com. And everything you need is right there. I'll send you a free information packet. All you got to do is put in your email. And no, we do not sell your data, not like a lot of the social media. So please do that, and you'll be on your way to financial protection. I've been a customer for 7.5 years to go with my advertising length for them for 8.5. The FTC wants me to tell you there's no guarantees. We agree. But I'll tell you what, I take this guarantee over what the banks are going to guarantee, which is nothing because you're an unsecured creditor now. DaveHodgesGold.com. Well, our guest, AJ Rice, is America's publicist, and he has his publishing company is the Published National Post. He writes on Substack. He has number one Amazon bestseller, The Working Dead, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. He's a brand manager, a star whisperer, a media influencer, a literary agent. He's brought me a lot of really good guests. And he, let's put it this way. This book needs to go everywhere because if you're sick of the crap your kids are being taught, if you're sick of hearing nonsense in media, whenever you turn on TV, whenever that would be, and I don't know why you would, this is the book you need to have right here. And this is it right here. AJ, how do people get a copy of this?
Well, it's available anywhere books are sold, but the usual Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Books a Million, places like that for sure.
Yeah, I've marked some things in here, but let me just ask you a general question before I launch into my litany of, hey, here's some interesting phrases. What motivated you specifically to write this book?
Well, it's funny you're asking where the books are sold. I mean, if this last election didn't go the way it was, they were going to be getting sold in the gulag. Okay, it's going to be live from the gulag, right? I like to think of myself as sort of a cultural commentator, cultural devotee. I absorb quite a bit of media, not just political, but sports and entertainment. And this book, The White Privilege Album, is actually volume two. Volume one came out in 2022. You mentioned it a minute ago. It was called The Woking Dead.
I
The
love that.
Woking Dead, right? How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. And, that took about 4 years to write. And while I was promoting it, I started writing the White Privilege album as sort of the unofficial official sequel. Because I noticed that when I was doing the book tour for volume one, a lot of wokeism and, the sort of nasty offshoots, DEI, ESG, cancel culture, the social justice warriors and all the rest, that a lot of it was race related. So I want to do, because look, your audience knows this, wokeism sort of a catch-all for cultural Marxism, which in its current sort of modern form is kind of like Baskin and Robbins flavors, right? There's a lot of flavors of it. There's a lot of sort of primary colors. So I wanted to drill down on one of the main primary colors, and that is the race hustle. And the race hustle isn't new. I'm from Philadelphia, so I'm not afraid of it. I'm not one of these white boys in the Midwest that, genuflect to all their black friends. I'm fine with it. I've got plenty of Allen Iverson jerseys at home that I could have worn one today. But I will go places that a lot of people won't because I grew up on the freaking playground. As your audience will hear, as this hour goes on, you will hear my Philadelphia accent come out, and you're going to love every minute of it as the Super Bowl champion that I am this year. So I wanted to get into the mix and look, I grew up, I'm a millennial. I'm a geriatric millennial, sort of at the older end of the millennial spectrum. But I grew up listening to Howard and I grew up listening to Limbaugh. And one of the things Rush used to say is that if you can use irreverent humor or absurdity to illustrate truth, that's what I do with my two books, The Woking Dead and The White Privilege Album. And I will tell you, I have been going, I don't know. I've heard John Grisham say this. I've heard Nicholas Sparks say it. I've heard Jack Carr say it recently, that once you sort of create a formula, the first book took 4 years. Second book took two. Well, next year, book three will come out, and it's already done. Took about 9 months. So, I've sort of hit my stride. Now, it doesn't hurt that, this is a target-rich environment of lunatics out there for us to dunk on, right? It's, believe me, and you were chuckling before we came on. I mean, there's plenty of jokes that end up on the cutting room floor, or they become stale or dated. So what I try to do is do a collection of some of the sort of funniest vignettes to illustrate, at least with the White Privilege album, the sort of race animus that the left tries to bring up against Republicans, conservatives, libertarians. And look, I do three main things in the book. I defend Western civilization, I defend the middle class, and I defend the nuclear family, and I try to have some fun along the way.
Yeah, well, some of the fun here really comes out. I'm going to ask you about a couple passages as we go here. I had to laugh my way through the first passage. Diabetes exposed as racist. Can you talk about that?
Well, look, I mean, these are our Civil War opponents that we're fighting here. The people that are running through the streets as we speak, lighting Teslas on fire, going on college campuses, doing a little Jew hunting, Snow White and the Seven, Snow White and the Seven Anti-Semites in a movie theater, flopping. So there, when it comes to wokeism, which is essentially political correctness and cultural Marxism, especially when it comes to the humanities departments, which is where this stuff used to live and breathe and metastasize like some nasty foot fungus. This studies and that studies and midget studies and underwater lesbian basket weaving studies and all the rest of it. It used to just be in the humanities departments, where in the academy or in sort of your scholarly journals world, your white paper world, this stuff would sort of stay there. But no longer. It has migrated to the maths and the sciences and all the rest of it. So when you're talking about medical journals in particular, especially in the era of global warming and 72 genders and, the China virus that escaped Dr. Fauci's underwear drawer, when you're dealing with that, the left is willing to sort of fudge any form of data and extrapolate using postmodernism and deconstruction and all kinds of wacky sort of, French philosophies that used to just be in the English literature department, right? Or it's in some cases, sociology. They are now using that to quantify diabetes, to quantify all kinds of things. Who got COVID and why, right? COVID was hunting brown and black people. Right, we heard that. And so I look, you have to expose this stuff, whether it's Alzheimer's or diabetes. The funny thing is, if you examine this stuff, I mean, there are certain people that get certain illnesses. It's just a quantitative medical fact. Sickle cell anemia doesn't necessarily affect people from Scandinavia. It affects a certain group of that, not all sub-Saharan Africans. But a certain area of Africa, right? And in other forms, there are people from Africa that are immune to things, immune to malaria, immune to West Nile virus, on and on, whatever it is. So look, the left takes these things and they pat themselves on the back and they, write these white papers and they put out these studies basically saying that, in order to quantify actual data of who or in some cases not quantify actual data about who gets diabetes or who gets heart disease or who gets Alzheimer's, the left uses race and gender and sexual orientation to try to quantify this stuff, or not, or basically say, if you have to have a sort of bell curve of stupidity. They do it with math, right? They do it with math. Or if you say, well, inner city kids can't write a full sentence with a subject and a predicate. Well, racism and colonialism is to blame for that. So it's just crazy. I mean, you have to point it out And might I just add this? Because this is some of the stuff that's in the news this week. And I knew they were doing this with climate change. But if you are looking for a government grant, or if you're looking to get some sort of research funded, some kind of endowment even, if you slip in there climate change, like, we want to study the mating patterns of the left-handed locusts in Brazil, wherever the hell it is, right? If you slip in because climate change might be involved, you immediately get money from the left. If you slip in there, transgender stuff, you immediately get money. And for a long time, if you're doing race stuff, we want to study the racial makeup of the customers at Foot Locker on Sunday morning between 11 and noon. Oh, okay. Let me write the check to you. This is what they do. So when you see the Trump administration right now examining some of these left-wing colleges and universities and cutting off their money, like Harvard, it's because they're either using it for insanity, like I just said, or they're abusing their privilege to get money in the first place by allowing anti-Semitism and, going after white people and this, that, and the other thing on campus. So, they're taking some of their own medicine now. They've been living high on the hog, getting money for garbage for almost 40, 50 years at this point.
Yeah, those are all great points. I have a question to ask you. And ladies and gentlemen, audience warning, if you're consuming food or drinking something right now, give yourself a moment to pause because I don't want you spitting this out in laughter. When will the NAACP issue a travel advisory to Chicago?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's
I
great.
mean, look, so the NAACP issued a travel warning to Florida
Yeah.
for African Americans going to Florida during COVID because of DeSantis's policies. Not just, the fact that he didn't, shutter the entire state the way Illinois did, with the Kool-Aid man there. And is that the guy there from the old Kool-Aid commercials that's the governor of Illinois now, Prickster, the guy that the big fat Kool-Aid jar that burst through the wall? I think he's the governor of Illinois right now. And he thinks,
Is.
I think he thinks he can eat his way to the presidency. So we'll see. We'll see if he can eat his way to some. He's going to line up Chicago dogs from the Miracle Mile all the way to Georgetown. He's going to try to eat his way there. Look,
To be
I will
off
tell you
color, he's
this.
eating BS. But any, yeah, that's a
So,
great line though about travel advisory to Chicago. But the sad part is, it's true, and a lot of
sure.
our black citizens are suffering because of the
Right.
lack of law enforcement.
Well, and some of it also was the fact that DeSantis was cracking down on Disney and throwing DEI out. So the NAACP is really worried about all the African Americans that play on the Orlando Magic, all the African Americans that play on the Tampa Bay Rays and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? And on the Jacksonville Jaguars and on the Miami Heat and so on and so forth. It was, I guess it was news to them. It was news to Pat Riley. It was absolutely news to the owners of the, Tampa Bay Lightning, although there's not a lot of blacks playing there, but they go to they're fans of the team. They're not maybe not that many playing. But there's some blacks in the NHL. But all the colleges, all the SEC schools, look out. DeSantis is coming in his white robes with his, bowl full of spaghetti and meatballs. Look, it's crazy. They will never issue a travel warning to any of the places where, unfortunately, the left has redistributed the entire third world to black neighborhoods. They won't redistribute the children from black neighborhoods to charter schools, but they will redistribute, Evanston, Illinois's money to the South Side. And look, there's no grocery stores in the ghetto. For various reasons, they hit African Americans in a lot of these cities with something called a dine-in tax. So if you're a single mom, you go to Mickey D's, you got two kids yourself, you're looking at maybe $23 to feed everybody. And then, the scumbag mayor of Chicago hits you with a little tax, a little fee. All the black, single moms of the world, I'm sure, love that. They defund the police. They strip away Second Amendment rights. So look, If the NAACP wants to issue some travel warnings, they should look at Chicago. They should look at, Baltimore and, Los Angeles on certain days of the week. I mean, it's a mess, but they don't care about that. They care about red state governors allowing freedom and commerce to continue during COVID, during the summer of love, and even right now with the Tesla burners and the Hamas students. They're very concerned.
You know, what's amazing to me, you brought up an interesting thing, and Harvard's in the news for allowing their students to abuse their Jewish students. And what's amazing to me is Harvard is somehow saying this is a proper dissent. Since when is proper dissent blocking people from going to class, attacking people because of their ethnicity? I mean, just physically assaulting them because of what's going on the other side of the world that they have nothing to do with. That is not proper dissent, but that's how it's being couched by the left.
That's right. And look, it's a Kristallnacht. It's you got nights of long knives, you got days of long knives. But look, here's the thing. They will lose in the end. The subtitle of my book is Bringing Racial Harmony to Very Fine People on Both Sides. And Dave, I just want to do a big shout out to all the very fine people watching right now. You know who you are. This last election, there was only one candidate that was able to get the Muslims of Michigan to vote the same way as the Jewish voters in the suburbs of Philadelphia. And part of it is the fact that the left has thrown in, and even if you just look at the last 100 days, who are they telling us that they are? Well, apparently they're the party of sending men into Nancy Mace's bathroom stall on Capitol Hill. They're the party of turning around planes filled with MS-13 child molesters so that they can come to the cul-de-sac near you. They're the party of, random, disgruntled youth shooting healthcare CEOs on the streets of New York. They're the party of the Tesla burners, all those barrel-ass white baby boomer government employee scumbags over there, and not far from where I'm sitting, Kites's Corner, Virginia, out there. You don't even see one black face out there. Just a bunch of old stinky hippies out there. Don't take our pension. It's ridiculous. The Tesla burners, of course. And of course, they're the party of, the Jew hunters on college campuses for sure.
That's true.
And quite frankly, not just Jewish students, but they're after Charlie Kirk's people, and they're after the ROTC programs. I mean, good luck. Hopefully they'll run into a few of those by accident. But I'll tell you, they're doing all of this. They're lifting their skirt up. They're showing us who they are, Dave. And
I know.
while all this is happening, who have they picked? Who have they picked as their press secretary? My girlfriend, I love her. Jasmine Crockett, my new girlfriend.
Oh
I
my
love
God.
her.
No.
Oh, now she's mad. She's mad that these tariffs are affecting her supply of Chinese plastic eyelashes. Okay? She's pissed. She's pissed she can't get those eyelashes in here. Right? But they send her out. They send the bartender out there, AOC. And then, of course, the leader of the youth movement, Bernie Sanders, 83-year-old, Marxist out there. So this is who they're showing us. They just got their ass kicked. The very fine people kicked their ass. And this is their response in the first 100 days. This, potpourri of insanity. And look, I'm a marketing guy. I love it. I say, keep it up. Keep it up, because they're doing everything we need them to do for them to not take back any House or Senate seats next year.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen because that is my big fear. How does Ice Cube, the rapper, fit into all this?
Well, so here's the thing about Donald Trump. Long before he, even actually ran, Donald Trump is a figure, cultural figure. He's become much more now. I mean, he's always been a cultural figure, but for the longest time, he was a cultural figure in black culture in particular. Not just because he's the playboy of the Western world, in Manhattan, but mentioned in rap songs and hip hop music for 30, 35 years, used his plane to go get Nelson Mandela, bring him to the United States, hanging out with Don King, hanging out with Jesse Jackson for years. Al Sharpton had nothing bad to say about him. Got Mike Tyson, I think he paid his bail or fines. Just little things that obviously the left doesn't want people to know about. Now, the internet has sort of informed everyone. But you know, Stephen A. Smith talks about this, you know, the ESPN analyst, and most athletes, and it's it, and in particular the older rappers, you know, the ones that are my age, you know, the ones that are in their 40s and 50s, they know that there's nothing racist about Donald Trump. And Trump, you know, we were told that a chubby white guy from Arkansas was our first black president. Then we were told that this half black guy from Kansas and Hawaii was really our first black president. Newsweek even put Obama on the cover of it at one point. Google this, ladies and gentlemen, and then you can just use your imagination. It was a picture of Obama's face on Newsweek with a rainbow halo around his head that said, "Our first gay president." Isn't that interesting? Well,
Yeah,
you know,
you talk about years of cover-up, and then all of a sudden, there it
sometimes
is.
these jokes, just write themselves. I just let that breathe for the audience.
I hear you.
But look, Obama, you know, he did have Jay-Z and Beyonce in the Situation Room, you know. He should have been hunting ISIS. He wasn't. He was, you know, maybe he was hunting them with Beyonce and Jigga Man. I don't know. But he was friends with rappers. But it's different with Trump. It's different. There's a cultural connection here that, you know how many times the phrase is Black Trump has been uttered in a rap song? A lot. A lot. Now, Ice Cube had a program, I believe it's called like a contract with Black America. And the Democrats wouldn't meet with him. The Democrats wouldn't talk with him. But the Trump White House reached out. Jared Kushner reached out, and some of the people in the White House reached out. And they had a bunch of meetings to try to get some of the initiatives that Ice Cube was worried about. Ice Cube grew up in, you know, South Central and Compton, in Los Angeles. He's not freaking Ben Carson. He's not Clarence Thomas. He probably votes Democrat most of the time. But the Democrats wouldn't even meet with him. Wouldn't even meet with him. And he let that be known, which is why he did interviews with Tucker Carlson and, you know, Bret Baier and others, because he was just trying to get something done. The same thing with Mayor Adams now in New York, trying to get something done. So there's a pragmatism about Trump that the left tries to shoehorn him into, you know, him being like the leader of the Klan or something. He's, you know, ultra MAGA, fascist, you know, the garbage that they throw around, which didn't work, obviously. And black males in particular moved towards Trump in this last election. Will they hang around for the rest of the dorks in the Republican Party? They might not. They got work to do. Yeah, you heard it here first. You know, they shouldn't make a home for anyone. They should be a little more circumspect about their vote. But here's one of the funniest stories. So in the book, there's a chapter called Donald Trump, Our First Hip Hop President. Not Bill Clinton, not Barack Obama, Donald Trump. I find this one just hilarious. Now, we know that Trump worked with Ice Cube. He issued a lot of pardons at the end of the first term for Lil Wayne, for Snoop Dogg's cousin, and they all came out and praised him. Obviously, he's friends with 50 Cent. He praises him. He's friends with Kanye. Everyone that saw that, has seen that. He praises him. But one of the funnier things that I find just hilarious was that at one point during his first term, a rapper named ASAP Rocky got imprisoned in Sweden, in Scandinavia. Okay? You know, he was probably doing what he does, and they grabbed him and he's in jail. So, you know, the bat phone rings in the Oval Office, and I think it's Kanye and maybe some other people saying, "You got to get him out of jail." This is one rapper, one singular black male. Trump then, here's a preview of the Greenland expansion tour. Trump basically threatens a member of Europe. I don't know if Sweden was in NATO at that point, but you know, the EU, NATO, Scandinavian country, might I add, one of the whitest countries on planet Earth, the whitest of the white, whitest. So Frosty the Snowman lives there. Okay? Casper the Friendly Ghost lives there. And look, the Scandinavian people, used to be tough. They used to be, Minnesota Vikings, but they're not anymore. They're not. They're sitting around with their 20-hour work week, and they're putting suction cups all over themselves, and love is love, and could they attack England and France tomorrow? Now, could Ragnar Lothbrok's children rise up tomorrow and take Normandy like they did 1,000 years ago? No, they could not. However, Trump basically threatened this country with a trade war if they didn't release one rapper, one African American male. I have never in my life seen any president threaten an EU ally to cripple their economy, all those penguins they're eating or whatever the hell they're doing there. Maybe the salmon, they're eating salmon, I guess, from the Faroe Islands. Cripple their economy if they don't let one rapper out of jail. I've never in my life seen this. I didn't see the president from Hawaii do this. I didn't see, Toni Morrison, Maya Angelou's first black president from Arkansas do this. I saw Donald Trump do this, and I look humorously write about it in the book. But there's so many of these little vignettes out there that, that's why the left has had a hard time making Trump the leader of the Klan or of the Very Fine People hoax or the January 6th insurrection hoax, right? Because Trump has always been an enormous cultural figure in the world of most African Americans.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. Trump is able, his strength is being able to connect to people from different economic strata as well as different racial and ethnic groups. I totally agree with you. And you're absolutely right. In fact, what was it? 30, was it 39% of black males voted for Trump, if I'm not mistaken?
Oh, in some places like Georgia and Pennsylvania, it was like in the 40s.
Yeah,
I think
and
47.
what an amazing performance by him. Given the history, let's talk
Well,
about some of. Go
let
ahead.
me just while I'm ragging on Obama, let me hit him a little more. So here's the funny thing. So Philly, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Clark County, Nevada, which is Vegas, Maricopa County, Glendale, Arizona, and obviously Atlanta. Now, these were all question marks. Was he going to be able to bring home these states that Biden, the reanimated corpse, supposedly won 4 years earlier? And I love this moment during the last campaign where Barack Obama, who has three multi-million dollar homes in three of the whitest neighborhoods in the country, Palm Springs, Hawaii, and Martha's Vineyard, and these other places. I think he's got one in Chicago, in like the fancy section of Chicago, Hyde Park. He flies to Pittsburgh on behalf of Kamala. And remember, Kamala's the first Jamaican jerk chicken eater, and the first woman who could make a samosa, and the first woman who could do this and that and all this other stuff, right? And she's from Northern California, and then she's from, McGill University in Canada. She's from all these places. The first this, the first that. The first woman with airline bottles in her pantyhose. Anyway, so here's the thing. He flies to Chicago and he's got this room and he's wearing his Brioni suit, $3,000 suit, fine Italian, cotton linen blend. And he walks in to the room full of the brothers, a bunch of Pittsburgh Steelers fans, right? Look, the brothers don't have Alzheimer's like we talked about earlier. They don't have it. They don't have amnesia or Alzheimer's. So they remember who this man is. They remember that he didn't do really jack for the black community when he was president. Yeah, he was playing pickup games with LeBron, but other than playing pickup games with LeBron, he didn't do jack for them. So he goes in, Mr. Harvard Law, he goes in, got the room full of the brothers, because they had the numbers. They had the numbers that you just quoted, but they had them then. They had them in September, August when he did this. He goes in and he says, "Listen, brothers, I'm really concerned that, Kamala's from the neighborhood." We're going to get to that in a second. I don't know what neighborhood she's from. I just named a bunch of them, but we'll get into that. Kamala's from the neighborhood, and I'm really concerned that the brothers in particular are not necessarily wanting to vote for, the first black female for president. So remember, you got the first hip hop president, a Scotch, Irish, German immigrant from Queens named Donald Trump. And then you got the first Indian and the first Jamaican and the first, the this and the that and the first woman married to a guy who knocks up the nanny and all these other things. Right? So he walks in there and he basically says that this room full of Steelers fans are possibly sexist, possibly misogynist. That she's from the neighborhood, that they should vote for her because of skin color. And don't worry about the fact that she's got ovaries and she never used them, right? Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Woman that has no children, okay? So basic, but here's the thing. There was once upon a time, there was a Democrat named Daniel Patrick Moynihan who used to have this saying, which was, the soft bigotry of low expectations. So he basically walked in there and said, "Listen, brothers, you got to vote for her. She's from the neighborhood." Now, here's the thing. She came out in a debate with Donald Trump and said she was from a middle class family.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, is that Marin County? Is that McGill University? Fancy pants parents and this and that? Or is that her? Is that her? Or is this version of her? The version of her that in a debate with Biden 4 years earlier said she was in a forced busing situation. So which is it, Barack? We don't all have Hussein in the membrane. Which is it? Is she, which neighborhood is she from? Is she from a middle class family? Fancy? McGill University? And for the audience, McGill University is kind of like Yale in Canada. Okay? Fancy, all white, right? They had noodles made out of zucchini and squash 20 years before we did in America. Okay? This is how white and dorky they are. Okay? They had pasta made out of squash and zucchini. Anyway, my point is this. Barack is talking down to them. Talking down to them. And like you said earlier, Trump, he's a blue-collar billionaire. He's an I-beam guy. He grew up with all different types of people in, Atlantic City, New York, doing deals and this and that. Italians, Jews, blacks, Puerto Rican Day Parade, the whole deal, right? He's friends with Oprah back then. He's friends with Barbara Walters. He's on Larry King. He's on Larry King, by the way, 40 years ago, bitching about the Chinese. But here's the thing. This election, and Bill Maher said this recently, and most elections are about this, unless you've got some traumatic event happening. The American people can smell a phony.
Yeah.
And they care about two things, really. DNR, DNR, DNR till the cows come home. But they care about merit and authenticity. And Kamala Harris had neither. She had neither.
Amazing. I could do a better interview if I wasn't laughing inside. I wanted to ask you too about Black Lives Matter loves Hamas, and I'm going to preface this by saying this too. I know someone that got canceled from social media that said the phrase "White Lives Matter too" in
Sure.
response to that. That was the most ridiculous thing I ever saw. And I'll tell you, people I know in my world that are black are abhorred by Black Lives Matter. The vast majority of them can't stand it. They think it makes them cast them in a bad light. Let's talk about that. Black Lives Matter loves Hamas.
Well, here's the thing. Totalitarians of a feather usually do flock together. And look at the most racist regime of the 20th century after Mao. A lot of people don't realize this, but Mao Zedong and En Lai Zhang and those guys, I mean, they're as racist as Hitler, killed way more people, through the Cultural Revolution, the tiger hunting squads, and the Great Leap Forward, and all the rest of it. And it spilled over to, Pol Pot and Vietnam and the little Kim family there in North Korea. So,
Exactly.
Hitler, who, was not a fan of anyone that wasn't, part of this master race that he had conjured up in his perverted, dreams, was willing to do a deal with an Asian country that he should, and maybe if they had won, he'd have went after them too eventually. Do a deal with them. Germans do not think Italians are white. In fact, Italians weren't really considered white here in the United States until the late 20th century. So he does a deal with Mussolini because they had common purpose. And like I said, you got all these little fascists in the rowboat. They all row the same direction if it suits them. If it suits them. It's why, Iran, who hates the Sunnis, will back Hamas even though they're Arab Sunnis. They'll fund them. So when it comes to Black Lives Matter, and not just Black Lives Matter, my name, Antifa, Occupy Wall Street, the Pink Pussy Hat Girls, Queers for Palestine, all the fun, all our Civil War opponents, the 300-pound fatsos with the blue hair, okay, that we're going to be up against, that some 17-year-old putting up fencing in Texas could probably wipe out in 15 minutes. So these are our Civil War opponents, and they joined together. Black Lives Matter on their website condemned the nuclear family, said it was a vestige of, white supremacy. It was a, intersection, construct of white supremacy. And right next to that is their love letter to Hamas. What I found fascinating is when this happened, October 7th happens, Hamas jumps out right away. We love this, right? There was a ton of fairly famous left-wing Jewish comedians and entertainers, Michael Rappaport, Sarah Silverman, Chuck Schumer's chubby niece that can't act. What's her name? Amy Schumer. Okay. They were stunned to find out that all their Bernie bros, that all their, workers of the world unite people. All the squad, AOC, all of them were all anti-Semites. That basically all that, United Socialists of America, who you're seeing them running around now, they're still out there, that they all threw in with Hamas. With the people that went into a concert and murdered and raped teenagers and grabbed them and went into the kibbutz and chopped baby heads and all the rest of it. They were in with them. BLM was backing that. Because they see Israel not as, the ancestral home of the Jews. They don't even see it as a country that declared itself in 1948. They see it as a colonial power, a forward operating base for whitey, for the European powers, or a reparation state. And this is, I'm being generous, a reparation state because something happened in the 40s to the Jews. I'm not sure it's true. Somebody, I mentioned him earlier, but we won't, somebody did something to the Jews in the 40s, and we gave them the poor Palestinian Bedouins land, and they're just a colonial power, and they have to be evaporated. And look, that's the shit that is being taught in the humanities departments. Believe me, I was just there. Compared to you, Dave, I was there in the late 90s, early 2000s. I was there when 9/11 happened, fighting these people. And I have theories on why it's gotten worse. And it has to do with generations. And it has to do with the fact that a lot of the baby boomers are leaving and retiring from these colleges. And they, in particular, the boomers, have a direct line to the liberation of Auschwitz, the liberation of Dachau, and so on, because their parents were there. But Gen X, millennials, my generation, now my generation, we're the children of boomers, whereas Gen Z are the children of Gen X. So, there, but the further we get from World War II, the more theoretical the Holocaust becomes. Well, the Holocaust, this is the shit they teach. The Holocaust is, it's all esoteric, it's all sort of built on perspective and, who was looking where and, that's what's being taught now. That all of the reality, the timeline, is fungible. that you can plug and play victimhood, and that the Jews in particular marched out of Western Europe, and they came there to this land called, this place called Jerusalem, and they just threw all the wonderful Bedouin out. They were doing so much with it, the nomadic tribes of the Arabian Peninsula. They were doing so much with it that they threw the Philistines, I mean the Palestines out, and took their land from them. So look, this type of philosophy, this fits right with the same garbage you hear from, not only Black Lives Matter, but the 1619 Project nonsense, Ibrahim Kindy X, this jerk off in New England, and also some of these Chicano crazy, like La Raza, some of these weird ethnocentric Marxist groups that run around yelling stuff like, we didn't cross the border crossed us. This type, right? This type of stuff, right? So they all will get in the boat together
It's interesting.
because
You, I'm sorry.
their goal, yeah, their goal is the destruction of the West.
That's true. You're totally right. In fact, let me take La Raza as an example of that. It's interesting you'd mention them. Reconquista de Aztlan, where they want to take the eight states that
That's
they
right.
claim were theirs, plus actually the four northern territories of Mexico, the provinces, states there, and combine it into one country. The latest plan is wait for the Civil War in America, then we'll do it. And believe it or not, they have some support from Governor Abbott on that. And I'm not joking. I've seen the documents. I've seen the
Whoa.
documents from people living in Mexico. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, this is, I'm not joking when I say that. It's
Wow.
real. And as I looked into this, the headquarters was Chapman University with those liberal morons, and they're tied directly to the Vatican and the Jesuit Church. They're funding a lot of this stuff.
Interesting.
I wouldn't say
Interesting.
this if
Wow.
I couldn't prove it.
Crazy.
Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio and the
I
president
know
of the
Paul.
California
I know
movement.
Paul.
Yeah,
Yep.
Paul and I have done shows on this. I've done this also too, shows with this on with Sam Arnold, who's our first
A lot
American.
of people don't know. I mean, a lot, talk, I mean, Mexico, I mean, Texas was part of it. It liberated itself,
Yeah.
became its own country, and then we annexed it. It joined us, and then it left again in the Civil War, and then it came back. But a lot, if you come to the 20th century in particular,
I know it's
and look,
amazing.
here's the thing, some of these places they're talking about, I mean, they got their ass kicked in the Mexican-American War, and we took them. We took them. We did. What's interesting is that even in the 20th century, the early 20th century, people don't, people, you know, when people talk about World War I, there's all this talk about, the sinking of the Lusitania and some of these other things that happened. And that, look, they were all part of why we eventually begrudgingly got into World War I. But one of them that is always left out is this thing, and I'm sure you know this, is this thing that we intercepted called the Zimmerman
Yeah,
Memo,
correct.
which Wilson, I guess, got a hold of and he waved it around in front of Congress. But just the short and sweet of it, ladies and gentlemen, is that the Kaiser in Germany was basically signaling and sent this memo. This guy Zimmerman sent this memo to Mexico City and said, look, the United States gets into this war. If you attack them from the south and help us, Germany, we will help you do what Dave just said, is that we will help get these pieces of land back. So Mexico, our neighbor, was going to throw in with Germany. The Axis powers, or the Central powers in World War II, the Central powers in World War I. So look, the game's afoot,
Yeah.
and it's going on right now.
AJ, you're right. You're so right. What does Mark Twain say? History may not repeat, but it sure does rhyme. Right now, we have the Chinese arming and training the Sinaloas and the CJNG cartels to launch an invasion. This is why you see military armored vehicles at the border. You don't need rocket propelled grenades to stop illegal immigration. It's the invasion they're worried about. China wants a second front war on our southern border so they can go after Taiwan and we don't have the resources to stop them. That's their plan.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
it's amazing. It's amazing how you have said so many things that have resonated with me. I want to bring somebody up I admired him when he rose to fame quickly, and then he faded unbelievably quickly too. Colin Kaepernick, and since he hit the downward slide on his quarterback career, this man is far left of Looney Tunes. You want to address what you said about him in your book?
Well, yeah, for sure, and I know we're going to be short on time, but one of the things I do in the book is I talk sports, and I sort of give examples of times when white people risked blood, treasure, reputation, and sometimes their life to bend, as the left likes to say, the arc of progress towards justice. I'm trying to bend it to away from wokeism here, and it's easy to just rip Kaepernick, who's a biracial guy, was adopted by white parents, and
My parents.
he basically threw his white parents under the bus on behalf of his little 15 minute of fame from kneeling. And Nike gave him some white guilt money, but he basically vanished from the earth. But he was a media darling. I mean, he was a star. And I bring him up because a side by side with him would be Yankees superstar Aaron Judge, also of mixed race background, also adopted by white parents from Colorado. The Atlantic and ESPN try to suck Judge constantly into putting his black fist in the air, and he here's the thing. If you're going to be the captain of the Yankees, the most important franchise in baseball, you're the captain for everyone. Every butt that goes into those seats in the Bronx, black, white, yellow, gay, whatever the hell it is, you're the captain for everyone. He understands this. He understands it. He's got wisdom beyond his years, right? And he loves his adopted parents. He thanks them all the time. And he doesn't fit the media mold. Now, they tried to do this same crap to Jeter, another mixed race captain of the Yankees, for 25 years. Suck him into this, black power nonsense. But if you're going to put on the navy pinstripes and you're presiding over a franchise with 27 World Series rings, you have to be the MVP. You have to be the captain. You have to be the leader for every single person that works their ass off in New York City to scrape by to get those tickets. So you can't kneel for these people and stand for those people. And that's the fatal flaw for some of these athletes that do this, right? Because
Brother.
Kaepernick can think whatever he wants. But unlike Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who I think history sort of has validated some of their struggle, Kaepernick has become a punchline. And some of these other athletes that throw in with China, like LeBron, throw in with the trans movement, like Dwayne Wade and others. Not all protest is created equal. And I do not think history will look fondly on them, but they will on guys like Derek Jeter and Aaron
I
Judge.
agree. I know. And Aaron Judge is such a great baseball player. I don't
He
mean
is.
good. I mean, he's Hall of Fame and one of the best ever. And I
Sure.
think he's still got his better days ahead. And you're right. And it just sometimes you can't erase common sense from people. And thank God for people like that. You said something interesting when you talked about Mal. What I've said about, cutting kids' genitals off. And this obsession with race, and there's race in the wallpaper kind of nonsense. It's a Maoist cultural revolution. I think it's designed to make us look over here at the culture while they install their Bolshevik version of communism in America. I think a lot of it's a distraction. What do you think?
Well, for sure. But here's the thing, and I wrote about this in The Walking Dead. At some point around World War I, it dawned on the Marxists here that because we have this vibrant middle class, they weren't going to be able to like hang the capitalists with the rope they manufactured, right? That they weren't going to be, if you look at where that has worked, it's always some, colonial power or some royal family like like the Romanovs or, Batista in Cuba, or what Ho Chi Minh did, and so on, right? Whereas here, you weren't going to be able to do that. You weren't going to be able to get the workers of the world to unite and burn the White House down. So, to get what you needed here, you needed to go a different route. You couldn't go the Marx, Stalin, Engels, Gorky, route. But there was an Italian philosopher named Antonio Gramsci, who basically said that if you can get them through their culture, then the other stuff will follow. That if you can get into the public sector union and you can get into the early radio, you can get into Broadway, you can get into, early Hollywood, you could get into the Democrat Party and academia, the newspaper business. If you could get into those sort of levers of the culture and do the long march, then you will have fruit at the other end of this. It just won't be quick. It won't be like the Jacobins or the Bolsheviks where you just go in and you kill everyone and you move on. Because you're not going to be able to do that here because our middle class is vibrant. But if you actually examine Democrat policies, everything they do is to destroy the middle class so that they can get there faster. I don't care whether it's a Green New Deal or redistributing the third world to your front yard. These things are designed, inflation, these things are designed to soak the middle class and break them so that you can get your revolution a little quicker. Because once that middle class is gone, then there's nothing but peasants. And then they can get their violent revolution that they want.
Couldn't have said it any better. I just had a quick question before we close because we're right up against it. Are you seeing an increasing number of people without naming names in the alternative media that are actually playing for the other side?
Oh, you mean people in the alternative media that are what? That
Whether
are
they may be George Soros trained plants or whatever their background.
Oh, I mean, look, I run Publius PR, so we work with everyone. I have not heard that. I know that there are rivalries, and there always were. I mean, Michael Savage and Mark Levin do not like each other. Even when there were radio wars with, shock jocks were at war with each other in the 90s. Howard versus Don and Mike and Imus and Opie and Anthony. I mean, this always goes on. In the medical freedom space, there's rivalries. I did this first. I discovered this. But, in the election integrity space, there's rivalries. Where are the real people that are going to save us? There's people that don't like, Bannon. There's people that don't like Tucker Carlson. There's, Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens shooting at each other. I mean, all this stuff is real. It goes on. Whether any of them are Soros plants, I can't speak to that.
Let me tell you what people like Sarah Wessel and I've talked about publicly. It's I'm not going to get into personalities because I think it hurts the movement and we need to press forward. But the
Sure.
way that I identify some of these people, and they're not worth listening to because they just downplay everything. It's so bad out there. It's horrible. There's no hope. Give up America. There's no solution. Just accept your fate. And there's people that promote this such negativity that if
Sure.
that's all they hear, they're never going to become activists in any way, shape, or form, including voting. And that is dangerous. And I see a pattern with some of these people, and it's almost like a like mindset. And that's what's led me to wonder out loud as some
Sure.
people are plants. And then I've heard the inside stories. I just wanted to get your reaction.
Well, look, I mean, there are people out there that want us to throw in the towel on the whole operation here.
Yeah, I hear you. And that's,
Yeah.
we're not one of them right here, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
This is a book you will laugh your way through and you'll alternate between humor and being pissed off. I'm just going to really be straight up honest with you. It's a great read, The White Privilege Album by AJ Rice. AJ, thank you so much for taking the time and being generous with it and coming on our show.
Well, brother, you're a patriot. You're an important voice. Hopefully we'll get some more Publius PR people on with you. I know Sarah, she's a patriot too.
Yeah.
And we appreciate the opportunity. It's always fun to bring a little derision to the left. It's one of our favorite pastimes. Everybody have a good Easter, Holy Week, Good Friday, whenever this airs. And keep fighting out there because we're only 100 days, if that, into Trump. And the deep state and the globalists are going to keep coming.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, thank you so much, AJ. Talk to you
Thank
soon.
you, sir.